Relationships rule. That's my motto. I'm Janice Porter, and I love to share the power of relationship marketing to help grow and impact business. I've grown my business by building and nurturing relationships, and I'd like to help you do the same. Welcome to the Relationships Rule podcast, where connection means everything. Hello, hello, and welcome back to Relationships Rule. Today, we're going to be talking about something that often gets overlooked in business conversations, yet affects everything: the quality of relationships. If you've ever wondered why people don't always do what seems obvious or necessary at work, or how to build a culture where people genuinely want to contribute, this conversation will give you a fresh perspective. My guest today is Norman Wolf, founder and CEO of Quantum Leaders and the creator of the Living Organization Framework. Norman has spent decades helping leaders understand why even the best strategies can fall short and what really drives results inside an organization. So welcome. Welcome to the show, Norman.
Oh, thank you, Janice. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Oh, it's my pleasure. When I first was introduced to you, I discovered we both live in Vancouver, but just in two different places, right? So that was our bond to start with. I liked that. Yeah. So let's dive right in, Norman. You've spent years exploring why well-designed strategies don't always deliver results. So what do you see as the biggest reason that things break down?
Well, it starts with the very foundation, what I call the paradigm of business. In other words, the paradigm is how we think about things, how we organize our understanding of the world we live in, and how we respond to situations because of this framework, right? Mm-hmm. And in the business world, the foundational framework is business is like a black box, like a machine. It takes inputs and converts it to outputs. The assumption is that it operates based on making the box efficient. Right? The more efficient, the more we call it productive, efficient optimization. The more we can do that, the more effective this organization will be. The downside in that is no matter how much we talk about people are our most important assets, or that people are our most important stakeholder, the framework itself relegates people, the very ones who are creating the results, they relegates them to nothing but a component part. Mm-hmm. And I don't know about you or your listeners, but being treated like a component part never really excites me.
Yeah, you know what that reminded me of when you were talking about it? I used to teach school a million years ago, and I taught elementary school, so it was a little bit different than high school. But when mm-hmm. my husband taught high school, and so often teachers in high school taught to the exams, and it was most important that they got all that stuff out so that the kids could write the exams. But they didn't necessarily take into consideration how different each child is and how they're, you know, like they don't all learn the same. It's kind of the same. It's not exactly the same, but it made me think of that because the people aspect gets relegated to the back. And that's exactly what you're saying.
It really does, because and it's not done consciously. That's why I call it a paradigm trap. Because it's not done consciously or maliciously, like some people think leaders are just greedy and all of that. They're not. I mean, I've worked with hundreds of leaders over the last 4 or 5 decades, and you know, they're good-hearted people. They care about their people.
Yeah.
But the number one responsibility is they must get the results for the success of the organization over time. And so they're operating from a framework that forces them to behave in ways contrary to how they themselves would like to behave, because that's the only way they know to get results.
Yeah, because they don't know what else to do.
So that's why I created the Living Organization Framework. And the basis of that is think of the organization not as a machine, but a person, and then ask the question, how does the person become optimized to create the results? That's a very different view of the world.
Right.
It's a challenging shift, but it's a very different view.
So that makes me want to ask, so if leaders get this new plan and they buy in, supposedly, and then they explain it to their people, to their employees, to their teams. They probably may think that they will naturally follow through and, adopt the plan. But why doesn't it work that way?
Well, if for a whole bunch of reasons, we gotta back up a little bit and understand what motivates people to behave the way they do.
Fair enough.
And when you do that and you begin to unpack that, which is what I spent a few decades now doing, it gets complicated, but underneath the complication is simplicity. And what I mean by that is people optimize their behaviors to create a life that they feel they're both safe and successful in. I've taken years of psychology and different models like Maslow and just reduced it to something very simple. I want to be safe and successful in my life. I learned from day one, from the very beginning, being raised, I learned this event happens. I give a meaning to it. And I go, given this meaning to this event, this is the way I should behave. And I end up collecting thousands and thousands of those experiences, which is really great because it allows me to navigate life very easily, right? I don't have to think about, this woman said hello to me. What does that mean? Oh, she batted her eyes at me. What does that mean? Right? I sort of know, and I know how to respond, and I can respond very naturally, right? So I'm very effective, and I know when that look means I should run away, So, I mean, it's just a natural way of living life. So now take that very simple pattern that I just explained and apply it to why people operate the way they do in business. First of all, from early age on, most employees have been trained to be good employees. I mean, our whole education system, you were in the education system, even up through university these days, we train people to be good employees. We want to give them the skills necessary to be employed effectively in the world. That sounds really good. We don't train them for critical thinking. We don't train them to take ownership for their own lives. We do train them to follow orders from their boss. We do train them on how to learn for the test, not necessarily learn to expand the knowledge, but just enough to get by. So they carry these same learnings, the same meaning-making behavior pattern into our work world. So now I have a bunch of people who basically live by, boss, tell me what to do, tell me how I'm going to be graded, and I'll optimize my behavior for that. That's not what we want from employees anymore. We want employees who are resilient, adaptive, can make decisions for themselves and for the collective they're part of, and be innovative and creative.
Well, when you say that we don't want that anymore, it takes me back again to when I first was in the work world and I was a teacher again. But I was this person. I was young. I was curious. I was cocky. And I would ask questions all the time, and it would always get me in trouble. Why do we have to do this way? Why do we? I don't read the agenda to me. It's right here. Like, why do we? Right? And I didn't like working in for other people. I found that out very early on, and that's eventually why I got out of teaching and started doing my own thing. But it's that compliancy thing overriding the critical thinking and the creative thinking and all of that. So, I don't know. I mean, I still think there's a lot of that that happens, but I also think because the world has changed so much that the younger generations don't see themselves being in the same job for 30 years and getting a gold watch, right? It's not the same world.
Exactly right. So, one, it's not working for anybody, but the younger generations are really really becoming resistant to it. I mean, like you, when I left university and got my first job, I worked for Pratt & Whitney Aircraft. I remember I was there, and I was like you. I was eager. I was excited. I mean, I actually wanted to go to work. I was tired of academics and wanted to do something useful, so to speak. And I get into the work, and I'm finding myself really liking what I'm doing. And really early, maybe 3, 4 months into the job, my supervisor was giving me some good advice. He said, "Norman, when you come to work, you leave your personal life at the door." I mean, I couldn't figure out what he meant by that. How do I do that? But you see, this is the pattern we have trained our employees to live by. And I love the fact that you use the word compliant, because in my writings lately, I'm asking leaders, do they want employees who are committed or employees who are compliant? And those are very
Very
different states.
different. Yeah, totally. So, all right. So, for leaders listening, how can they begin to recognize when relationship dynamics are getting in the way of results? And by the same token, other part of a question might be when they're being compliant or when they're not, when they're being committed. I mean, can they see the difference?
They can if they were looking for it. I mean, what leaders say they want is commitment, and they know all the benefits of it. They got people who are self-starters, self-organizing. They know how to ask the right questions, like you were saying. They ask questions. I have to take a sidetrack because it just reminded me of a story I lived through. During my consulting career, I had an opportunity to become part of a very interesting startup. And I was interviewing with the CEO, and he had a choice between me and another gentleman. And initially, he chose the other gentleman, even though his whole executive team wanted me. But things changed, and he had an opportunity to hire us both. So he brought both of us on. 6 months afterwards, we were at a meeting together. Actually, we were up in Vancouver visiting UBC, and we were having dinner. And he said to me, "You know, Norman, I don't understand it." "So what?" He said, "When I hired David, I thought he was the perfect employee. During the interview process, he very clearly let me know he was the lieutenant, I was the general. Yes, sir, whatever you want, I would do." Over the last 6 months, he constantly brought me one nightmare after another. It's like every morning I come in, there was another problem he would spend. "You, on the other hand, I never thought you would be compliant," right? To use that term. That's not what he said, but something along those lines. You were a pain in the butt. You asked me all these questions, but you never ever brought me a problem. You knew when to bring me a $2 issue, and you knew you didn't have to bring me a $100,000 issue." He said, "How did you do that?" And I said to him, "Because I asked all those questions, I understood what was important to you." And that's what leaders really want. They want Normans. They want people who ask those questions so they get, right? But they feel like those people are challenging them. And they look for those people who are compliant. So here comes somebody, it's our business strategy, and they get everybody nodding and saying, "Yes, we're all bought in," and all of that. But they're not committed, they're just compliant. "I can't hear you."
There we go. Sorry. Isn't that usually a leader who perhaps the Peter principle is in play? They're not confident in the role they're in, or they've gone too high up the totem pole, or no?
Some of that is probably true, but I think mostly there's, because business is what I call a time-based game. In other words, we have to get results quickly.
Yes.
It's easy to accept. It feels good in the moment to accept people nodding and saying, "Yes, and I understand, and I buy in," rather than stepping back and saying, "Are they complying or are they committing?" And that takes a little bit more of a nuance. It takes more of a relationship. It's not just hearing what you want to hear. It's
Okay.
testing the relationship, the quality of the relationship. Right?
Right. That
And
makes sense.
that takes more time and it takes more skills to be able
It
to do.
also takes, I think, the will to really care about people and know that that is, we're to the very beginning of what I said, right? Of the thing that often gets overlooked is the people piece.
Yes.
And so the leader, I guess, has to be that kind of person themselves, caring about people.
Well, I when again, I tend not to, quote unquote, judge people by saying they're not caring because they do care. I think it comes back to, and this is the part a lot of people miss, it's not that they don't care, it's they don't know how to care in a way that shows up correctly. In other words, they do care about the people, but when it comes to dealing with the people in an environment where there is time pressures and results have to get done. How do I do that is the question that's left unanswered, right? What skills do I need? It's easy. Here's a metaphor outside of business
Okay.
that I'll draw a parallel to. I come home from work, see my wife. She's a little bit, something feels energetically off. I say, honey, what's up? Nothing. Everything's fine.
Right.
Now you laugh. That's not uncommon. Everybody's faced that, right?
Yeah.
In my relationship with my wife, I'm going to say, I hear the words, but the music doesn't match,
Right.
right? So I'm going to probe a little bit, very nicely. In business, I hear the words. I might have a sense that the music doesn't match because I'm human, so I can sense it. But it's easier to accept the words than probe deeper because I've got thousands of other things to do.
Yeah, don't rock the boat.
And I just don't have time because I don't know how to, in that moment, say, I hear what you're saying, but it doesn't ring true to me. Can we talk about that? Something as simple as that.
Right.
But we've learned not to pay attention. Well, I should say every leader, a lot of leaders. Now, the re really good leaders learn to pay attention to that intuitive sense about relationships. And so it's not that the leaders don't care, it's just they don't know how to communicate. I'll tell you a side story again. So I've been working with one of my CEOs. And he come, we have a one-on-one on a Monday morning, and he said to me, Norman, I just have to tell you, ever since I've been working with you, my wife said over the weekend, I've become a better husband.
Ooh.
Now, it's the same skill set, right? I mean,
Yeah.
it's the
Yeah.
same ability to listen, to hear the lyrics, but also hear the music and respond to both in a way that is loving and supportive and caring. That's what people want. They want to
Yes.
be
They
cared for,
just want to be seen and heard.
seen,
Right? Yeah.
acknowledged, appreciated,
Yeah.
heard. They don't have to be right all the time. Most people know they're not right all the time,
Right.
but they want to
So
be appreciated and heard. Yes.
that's emotional intelligence, though, isn't it? That's
It is, but it the problem with emotional intelligence, it is emotional
yeah.
intelligence. But most people don't know how to train people for emotional intelligence.
Right. Right, of
Mean, we
course.
talk about it, we measure it. So part of the Living Organization framework, recognizing that there's a skill-based need, is why I developed the 6 core skills for leadership that to lead the Living Organization, which we'll be talking about in the second book that's coming out in September, called Leading the Living Organization.
Okay, do we need to, let's just, can we just talk about what those six things
Oh,
are?
sure.
Yeah,
I
let's
think
do
it's
that.
appropriate. So the first skill is the ability to hear the music as well as the words,
I love
right?
that. Yes.
And to do that, you really have to get out of your head
To your heart, right? You have
to
to
your
get to
heart.
your heart. Yeah.
That, right? And that's in fact what we call that skill, heart-centered wisdom.
Okay.
The head is always busy, and everybody knows we got the monkey mind and it's chattering all the time, and it's always trying to figure out and problem solve and all of that. But the head cannot pick up the subtle signals of life. We do that intuitionally. We do that through the body, and we have to be in a state where we're consciously reading that energy field around us, reading the music of the situation, whether it be in conversation or just observing what's going on in the world. It doesn't matter. I'll place in the
And
marketplace.
it's those who say they're feeling something rather than thinking something, right? Yeah.
And so I call it the place where we're open to intuition, insight, inspiration, and wisdom, right? Additional information that is absolutely critical to adding to our logical mind, that additional information, so we make better decisions.
Okay.
In the relationship part we were just talking about, it's simply learning how to listen to the music and the words at the same time and know when there's a disconnect and then follow up on that. It also means learning how to communicate both your words and your intention. You know, when I say something, I might think I'm fooling you by just saying, "Oh, I'm fine." But you know
Yes, but you're
different.
not.
So
Yeah.
why don't I just simply recognize, I don't care what words I use, you're going to pick up the music, so let me be authentic and
Yeah.
get the two aligned. But that requires a level of self-awareness.
Yes.
So we teach heart-centered wisdom and then heart-centered communication for both listening and speaking from a
Okay.
heart-centered place. Those are the first two skills. Recognizing that the way people behave is based on their framework of these behavior, meaning making, story making, and behavior patterns that I was talking about earlier. We call that collection of all of that our context. So
Context.
think of a context like our internal operating system. Event happens, we respond, right? Businesses are the same way. Organizations, they develop a collective context, and people within that organization respond a certain way to customers, to suppliers, to each other, right? So one of the things leaders need to do is learn how to reframe the context. So the context that drives behaviors are driving the behaviors that create the results. That makes sense, right?
Yeah, so that makes me think of like a company's not mission, but their
Also,
rules or what
yeah,
they ex
it's the unstated rules, the
Yeah.
belief systems, the culture,
Yes, the culture, right.
all of those things are really a result of the context, the narratives we hold, the stories we believe, and the behaviors associated with it. So the third skill a leader needs is to know how to reframe the collective context,
Okay.
right? And then the other two skills we call improvisation mindset and balancing opposites, which allow us to deal with the uncertainty of life. Right? I mean, life,
Pivoting.
it's,
Yeah.
there's no script, right?
Right.
There's no
Being
set
able to
questions I
act on the
can
spot and do the right thing, so to speak.
and to know
Yeah.
how to, and again, that requires knowing how to read the energy, also knowing when I'm resisting what truly is because it just doesn't fit. So we go into denial and
So,
rebellion against.
when you're talking to business leaders and you're talking about reading the energy in this business context, that's very could sound very woo-woo, and they're
I
going like,
know, I
right?
know.
What are you talking about, Norman? But how is that, especially coming from somebody who's a mature business person who's been in the business world for a long time? So, how do you get buy-in for that?
Well, I think it's because of the way I explain it, just like I
Okay.
did
Yeah.
before. It's like it's not woo-woo, you're not going off.
And of
It's
course, I know that, right? I'm just saying that I'm just
no,
putting
it's a great
that.
question. And the way I address it simply is, like I explained just a few minutes ago, look, you have to make critical decisions.
Yes.
You can make decisions with just your intellect, or you can make decisions with your intellect and your intuition. You choose, right? You're going to make a better decision, I'll guarantee you, if you use both. If you can, in the army, they train special operations, the Green Berets and so forth, on what they call situational awareness.
Okay.
There's nothing logical about it. You tune your body to pick up the signals in the environment that allow you to make better decisions. When I was at HP, they taught us a thing called management by wandering around.
I love it.
Yeah. And the idea of it was if you pay attention to the situation, the signals coming from the body language of the organization, if you will, the way people are interacting, whether they're smiling or not smiling, the energy field you're picking up, and you literally do. And we explain all that in our training, so it really grounds it, and it doesn't, it's not woo-woo meditation or
Sure,
kind
I
of.
understand. I was just, playing the devil's advocate.
No, that's great. And it's, and so it's a grounded way to view some really important information. For those leaders who think it's woo-woo, well, God bless them. Let them
They're
go
not
on
your people,
their
right? Yeah,
job.
exactly.
They'll catch on eventually.
Yeah, exactly. So, is it usually the leader that the CEO, the president, whatever, that comes to you because they're saying that, their company isn't functioning the way they want it to?
Yeah, mostly it's the CEO. That's that. Those are the people I want to attract, obviously. Mostly because, there's an old saying from when I was in on boards of directors. It's about setting the tone at the top.
Right, exactly. I was just
It's
going to say, because if they have to buy in for it to work,
yeah,
right? Yeah.
they're the ones that set the tone for the organization, and look at the word that has been used for decades now, setting the tone at the top. That's a musical note. That's a,
Yeah,
that's an
exactly.
energy field.
Yeah,
That's not a,
yes.
they
Yes.
didn't set the five instructions for the
Right.
organization, right?
Right.
Set the
The
tone, right?
tone from the
Because
top. Yeah.
unconsciously, that's why I'm able to explain it to leaders. Unconsciously, we sort of know it's true. So
Yeah.
I just tap into what they already know is true.
So
But that's, it's important for the leader to buy in. And I usually work with not only the leader, the whole executive team, because they have to be able to do it together. And there have been times where I've had to work with leaders with the uncomfortable transition where they recognize they want the organization to transform the paradigm, but there are a few people who are resisting it.
right,
And there's
fighting
nothing
back.
wrong with that, but you have to address that. You have to choose at some point which way you want to go.
Right. So I'm curious, does it feel different? Does it run differently when you have a female at the top versus a man at the top, male at the top? You don't have to answer that if you don't want to, but I just am curious.
No, no, it's not gender specific. It really isn't. It's
Okay.
more, the orientation of the leaders. I'm actually finding more men being curious about it because I think most men in their 50s, late 40s to early 60s are already beginning to question whether the way they've been raised to be leaders are the right ways.
Okay.
So I'm finding a really interesting receptivity. Although the CEO in the book, Leading the Living Organization, is Catherine. So it's a female.
Oh, on purpose? Yes.
I don't know if it was on purpose. It just sort of, when I write, and the second book was written with my wife, Jane,
Oh, cool.
the characters define themselves for me.
Okay.
I don't consciously think about it. They just sort of show up. And
Okay.
it's like, oh, we need a CFO. Oh, I think he's Nick. Oh, we need
Ah.
a CEO. That's Catherine.
I
And
love it. I love
yeah,
it.
it's just, they just show up. And
So
so.
that I'm going off script now and just going sideways to say, do you read a lot and do you read a lot of fiction?
I read a lot of fiction.
You do? What's your genre?
Mystery,
Okay.
spy novels,
Okay.
fantasy.
Oh, really? Okay. I hate
Fantasy.
fantasy. I just can't get into that. Okay.
Well, it depends on certain kinds of fantasy, not all of
Okay.
them. I like
Okay.
Harry Potter is a typical
Fair enough.
fantasy.
Yeah.
That's the kind of Lord of the Rings,
Sure.
things like that,
Okay.
magic and
Yeah.
dragons and stuff
Okay, cool. That's
like
cool.
that. Yeah.
And I know you have grandchildren. Do you get to read to them?
I do periodically. They're still very young, so
Yeah.
obviously the books. The time I remember when Harry Potter came out, my daughter at the time was about 10, 11.
Sure.
And we had a ritual. We read through all, I think, five of the seven books. Five. Anyway, we would read a chapter or two a night.
That's
And
wonderful.
I love taking on the voices and the
Yes,
stuff.
yes, yes. That's so funny you said that because I just had this conversation with my daughter and my granddaughter the other day because she's 6 and a half, but she really doesn't like to read. She'll go to the library and get books and stuff, but she tells me that she doesn't like reading. And of course, being a former teacher, it kills me because all I want to do is read to her. And I also love reading aloud. And I said, you know, I'd love to start reading this book to you, Amara. I read it to your mummy when she was little, and it's Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Beautiful book.
And the thing about that book that's so brilliant is that at the end of every chapter, you leave the child holding, like, oh, I want the next chapter. No, we got to go to sleep and do it tomorrow. Because, or in class, I would do it and do it, you know, a day. Please read another chapter. Please read another chapter because it leaves you hanging at the end of every chapter. And I don't want her to see the movie. I want her to read the book because it's such an amazing experience. So she's not ready though. But I said, well, I've got the book here. Whenever we're ready, I'll read it to you. So yeah, it's just so fun. Anyway, that was just a diversion that I felt the need to take.
A
That's,
lovely one. A lovely
thank you. Thank you. So if there was one shift that a leader could make today to strengthen relationships and improve results with their organization, what would you suggest?
I would suggest to start at the starting point, learn how to tap into the music.
Tap
Learn
into
to
them.
start listening to the music. Learn the art and skill of heart centering. Practice it and pay attention to not only what's being said, but what the music is that's coming across, or the energy, if you want to use that language.
Yeah.
What's really being communicated to you? And the more you practice that, the easier it gets, and the more intuitive you become, and the more effective you become.
So to me, that's observation skills, it's listening skills, and it's and being curious and asking the right questions.
Curiosity is one of the attributes of the heart center, right? You're open and you're curious and you're discovering and you're exploring. You're not framing, fixing, solving, correcting.
Exactly.
And that creates a different quality of relationship. There's a lot of talk in business today about psychological safety. And I conclude that, and I've read a lot of books about how to create psychological safety, and I've concluded you can't do it that way. Psychological safety is an experience of I am safe to be who I am in this environment. And you can't do it by any mechanistic approach. You've got to be truly coming from the heart with a sense of love and caring for the person. They have to feel that, not just hear it. And the only way to do that is to learn the skill of heart-centered communication.
So that makes me think of the situations that you hear. Like years ago, I used to teach when I was doing corporate training, I used to teach customer service skills and telephone courtesy skills because I worked for the telephone company as a trainer, an external trainer. And I remember people in big organizations and government situations where you know, they were taught that if somebody started, for example, swearing at them on the phone, they didn't have to take it. You know, they were give them a warning and then they could hang up, which I can understand. But what I no started to notice, and I've heard it even today when people say, you know, they get very defensive on the phone when they get someone who is out of control or is very angry or whatever. But sometimes they're not quite as angry as they need to be for this person on the other end to treat them kind of rudely and say, you know, you'll have to change your tone, Mr. Customer, or I'm going to have to hang up, rather than looking for that empathy of trying to
Right.
help them.
That's
So
right.
that mentality or that rule has come from above. And they get very, I don't know what it is. It's like, it's kind of like, oh, I don't know. I don't want to say what I'm thinking, but because it feels judgmental. But To me, it just doesn't seem like the right approach.
Well, it's like everything else we talked about. It's that machine paradigm mindset, right?
Okay.
It's about it's giving instructions to the machine on how the machine should operate.
Yeah, there's no heart center in that at all.
No judgment about it. It's just the way it is. But the byproduct is no empathy, no caring, right? And so, yeah, that's what I've set out to make people aware, to break the veil of the illusion that the paradigm we live in is the right one, to see, make it visible what the limitations of it are. It's not that it's bad, it just has serious limitations, especially for today's world. And so we've got to expand it, we've got to add on to it. And that's what the Living Organization Framework is
Okay,
intended.
one last question on this. And so with the leaders that you're seeing, the up and coming leaders, the younger generations, you know, the 40-year-olds and you know, 40 to 50-year-olds, a lot of them, maybe even younger, if you experience those young leaders, they've grown up with their phone in their face. So their social skills aren't that great in some cases. Do you
Well, they've
think
said,
that they're better if they see the path of leadership, they know it has to be different, or is it harder to train those people?
well, I haven't had a lot of people like that, but they've learned social skills. They just learned it through a different medium.
Really?
I
Okay.
mean, think about it. They learn how to socialize on TikTok and Instagram and stuff like that. It's just a different style of socializing, and they pick up different social cues. Does it transfer into leadership and business? No, but it does give them an appreciation for people they're leading who grew up in that era. I remember,
Okay.
when I started with Hewlett Packard, I remember saying to some of my peers, my friends at the time, upper management that just doesn't understand this computer stuff. We grew up with computers, right? 20 years later, my son, who was growing up in the internet world, started to be a coach to see in internet CEOs.
Okay.
And I said to him, Josh, you're just getting out of school. What do you know about coaching CEOs? He said, "What do you mean? I grew up with the internet. I know more about the internet than you ever will."
Yeah.
It's kind of a
Yeah.
generational thing. And that was a really good lesson for me, because every generation thinks the previous generation are Luddites, and we
Yes,
think
yeah.
they don't understand what's really going on. It's just for me, it's a recognition that we're going through generational transitions. And life for my parents was not the same life I grew up in. Life for my
Right.
son and daughters is not the same world I grew up in. And
Get with the program. You got to stay connected and stay alert.
the needs of people haven't changed and won't change. And the fact that we're learning how to automate so much of business these days
Which we
is
were
only
talking about before we went online.
exactly right. It's only going to heighten the importance of the human aspect of business.
That's true.
You
Yeah.
know, I mean, we have so automated our lives that so many people are missing that human contact. Whether it be replacing tellers with ATM machine, or replacing
Yeah.
receptionists with these push one if you want this, push two if you want that.
Yeah, it's so true. Wow, there's so much, and I'm excited for your new book to come out, which is
Thank
going to be
you.
September.
September 1st
September,
is
yeah.
on.
So we'll have to have you back when we talk about the new book,
Love to.
and I'm excited for that. So thank you for your insights, and it's a good reminder that results don't just come from plans and processes, but from people and the relationships between them. I'm going to take forward, listen to the music and the words as well. Listen to the music. When we start paying attention to how we connect, communicate, and create meaning together, everything begins to shift. So, to my audience, thank you for listening. And as always, remember that relationships do rule in business. Thanks for joining us. If today's show inspired you to make a new connection, why not start with me? Head over to LinkedIn and connect with me. Be sure to let me know you are a podcast listener, because I select one listener each month who connects with me on LinkedIn for a complimentary profile audit. And you know I love to meet new people, so I hope you take me up on it. Don't forget to stay connected and be remembered.